Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Use a Golden Motorcycle to Find Your Calling in Life. When literary agent Bill Gladstone was about 15 years old, he had a bad reaction to a shot and died momentarily during a doctor's visit. He remembers seeing a man in a white coat desperately trying to revive his body. After realizing the body was his, he thought, well, I better get back in there so the body will respond to that doctor. Many people have a story like Bill's. That's why when Jack Canfield, yes, the chicken soup for the soul guy, told Bill about his out-of-body story about a golden motorcycle gang, Bill responded by turning it not only into a book, but also a movement. And in this audio interview, you'll hear the golden motorcycle story, the book it inspired, along with the amazing ways it can connect you to the person you were meant to be and the world you were meant to live in. And you'll also hear examples of how to use the golden motorcycle principle in real life to find the you that is here for a purpose. You'll learn about the twist of fate mistake that turned the Golden Motorcycle Gang from a 15,000-word children's book into the mega-successful self-help guide it became. You'll hear the little-known side of Jack Canfield that shows life is more than just the material part of a success principle. You'll hear almost eerie proof that the universe isn't random at all. You'll get an eye-opening look at who your enemies really are in life and the disturbing ways society gets us wrong, especially politicians. You'll learn why Bill says it's not the go-getters who are successful anymore, but the go-givers, and how to know the ways you are meant to give. Bill says if we stop looking at life as if we're all just randomly placed humans and start looking at ourselves as spiritual beings who choose to come here for a higher purpose, we'll be able to know our true calling while also helping to connect the world. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how you're a part of it all. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Sinoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And today, we are talking with William Gladstone, author of The Golden Motorcycle Gang, a story of transformation, also written with Jack Canfield. William, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's really my pleasure.
This is an interesting book.
Well, it's based on a true story.
You know, it sounds like you've had some amazing experiences, and I wondered if you'd share, what was the inspiration for this?
Well, there's actually different levels. The backstory of the book is quite fascinating. I've known Jack Canfield for about 20 years. We were both speakers at IBI, which later became CEO Space, and I was very taken with Jack at that time. It was just a few months before Chicken Soup for the Soul had been released. So he wasn't famous, but he had a charisma about him, and he was just so clearly focused on coming up with exercise that would help other people. He did a self-esteem exercise with talk he gave, and I remember everybody doing the exercises. I did the exercise, and they actually worked. So I was fascinated with Jack from that moment on, and even though I didn't represent him, because once the Chicken Soup for the Soul books took off, he didn't actually need an agent. I mean, I'm a literary agent in my normal life. But we became friends, and whenever I was in Santa Barbara visiting my other clients there, such as Barbara Mark Subbert, I would stop by and have a meal with Jack. And during one dinner, he told me the story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang. And I was just fascinated with this story, because to me, having had an out-of-body experience myself when I was 15 years old, I was given penicillin, to which I had a negative reaction, negative in the sense that I literally died. According to the doctor, all my life signs were gone. And I had an experience as my consciousness, my spirit being, whatever you want to call it, existing after my death. And then I wrote a novel about this called The 12, in which I explain I came back into my body and then had a series of adventures and interesting life. Well, when Jack told me the story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang, and the story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang came to him when he was in graduate school in Massachusetts. He was asked the question, along with all the other graduate students in this educational program, to think back to the first moment when they wanted to become a teacher. And most of the students thought their parents, another teacher, a book, an experience. Jack went into a meditative state where he visualized himself riding a golden motorcycle through space with other spirit beings and looking down and seeing a small blue planet in distress and thinking, guys, we better get down there. Looks like they need our help. And at first his buddies resisted, but then they said, okay, let's stop in and see what's going to happen. Well, of course, the moment they incarnated, they forgot who they were as spirit beings, and then Jack's life began. And the Golden Motorcycle Gang is really the history of that.
Now, did you have a similar type vision? It seems to me there was something about that in the Golden Motorcycle Gang.
Yes, I did have a similar vision, not of riding Golden Motorcycle Gang, but of being aware that on a very real level, we exist as spirit beings. That the story that Jack had told of visualizing this may, on some level, have been a real experience. My experience was when I left my body, when I died, I was surrounded by other spirit beings. I was in bliss. I was in a place that is almost impossible to describe. So when Jack told me the story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang, it was like, I've been there. I could have been one of the gang. You know, I didn't know at the moment, but it just struck me as more than just a metaphor. It struck me as a story that might be literally true. Now, it doesn't matter to me whether the reader believes in spirit beings or doesn't believe in spirit beings, because as a pure metaphor, it's a wonderful metaphor, and Jack's life is organized around this inspiration that he had in this moment of visualization of incarnating for a specific purpose to inspire and teach and help heal this planet. And whether that's real or just imagined, it's a very good position to have in life, and I think it's been part of the reason, that focus, that has made Jack so successful with his books and his seminars, and also made him a very happy human being. And I share that motivation, and it's one of the reasons that I'm very happy as a human being, because I do see a larger reason for my existence. It's not just about me. It's about what I can do to help others. And in my case, it's not anything dramatic. I help others get their books published and lead a life of productive connection, connecting as many people as I can with their projects and their dreams.
We should mention that very significant people that you've helped. I know Eckhart Tolle was one of those people, and he's got a really interesting story.
Absolutely. And for me, it's fascinating. I mean, whether it's Eckhart or Neil Donald Walsh or Barbara Marcus Hubbard or Marianne Williamson, all these people that I get to interact with are just fascinating human beings. And for many years, I was focused on technology. So I got to work with people like Linus Torvalds, who created the Linux operating system, Peter Norton, who created Norton Utilities, Tom Anderson, who created MySpace, and on and on. So I feel very blessed in my life. But it is interesting how my life has evolved without any planning, in a way that the only real unifying principle that makes me successful is my ability to focus and to focus on joy and helping others. And I think that that is the key for Jack as well and for many of us here. And I think that as the world starts seeing that there is not this zero-sum game, not this conflict between taking care of yourself and taking care of others, we will evolve towards what Barbara Marcus Hubbard calls conscious evolution and a new earth. And that's kind of the theme that we've implanted in this book, and that's frankly why it's a novel. It's not until you get towards the end of the Golden Motorcycle Gang that we start to invent things. And what we're inventing is our imagined future. But until about the year 2008 in the context of the book, everything in the Golden Motorcycle Gang is literally true.
Right. It's an interesting blend of history and then some imagination, too. You know, you talk about at 15, you had a near-death experience that was pivotal in changing your outlook. And you actually had been declared dead.
I was with a doctor. I didn't get a death certificate issued. I wasn't dead that long. I don't know whether I was dead for a minute or 5 minutes. It wasn't a long time. But the experience I had was the doctor gave me this shot, said, sit in this chair, I'll be right back. And the next thing I remember was being completely not having any identification with my body, such to the extent that I felt myself as just a consciousness in the corner of the room, looked down, saw this human being making a lot of noise, then focused a little closer, so that human being was wearing a white coat, recognized him as a doctor, asked myself, why is that doctor so upset? Oh, that doctor's so upset because that body won't respond to him. And then, oh, that's my body. I better get back into it so the doctor won't be upset. And then my next memory as sort of a human being was looking into the eyes of this doctor and seeing his face go from panic to relief. And then him telling me, you know, I thought I'd lost you. All your vital signs were gone. You had no pulse. You turned green. You must have had a response. So in my case, it was clearly a blessing. I mean, obviously, if I had died, it wouldn't have been such a blessing. I mean, I'd be dead. So one of the things that I can tell your listeners is, there really is life after death. I was dead in the sense that I didn't have a body anymore, and probably the personality of William Gladstone probably was disappearing, but I was still alive. My consciousness survived. You know, I wasn't in that state long enough to know if all my memories would have survived, but I had a sense of being alive. I don't know how to say it in any other way. And the first few years when I would share this experience with others, you know, I had this experience in the 60s, people thought, oh, it was drug-induced or the oxygen to your brain was stopped and you were hallucinating and, you know, you didn't really have this experience. But now we know, because millions of people have come forth with similar experiences and similar descriptions of the states they entered in their near-death experience, to know that these experiences are true. And part of what the Golden Motorcycle Gang story, when I heard it, did for me was reconnect me, because for many years I had not even shared this story. I mean, I was obsessed with it maybe for a week after it happened, and then as a young kid, when people were sort of making strange faces at me and thinking I was weird, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be captain of the football team and president of the school, which I became and wanted to be, telling people a story that they felt was a little far out. So I kind of had put it on the side. When Jack told me his story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang, which he had never really focused on outside of his very intimate circle, was because he also, I think, got a little reaction. This story is a little far out. I mean, does Jack actually think he was a spirit being? I mean, come on. This is the guy that we're paying tens of thousands of dollars to come to our corporation to teach us success principles to make money, and he's talking about this woo-woo stuff? I don't think so. So Jack was a little shy about this, and it actually took me 10 years of every time I saw Jack saying, Jack, we got to turn that Golden Motorcycle Gang into a book. He says, yeah, I'm kind of busy. And finally I convinced him, really by accident again, because I had somebody who wanted to do a children's book with Jack. And I said, oh, do it around the Golden Motorcycle Gang. And then when things evolved, there was a miscommunication with Reed Tracy, the CEO of Hay House, where he had said, yeah, we do children's books, but he had meant text-based books of 15,000 words or more, and my client friend who wanted to do the children's book version of the Golden Motorcycle Gang was thinking of a 1,500-word picture book, which Hay House didn't publish. So, you know, at first I had a moment where I said, well, I guess this isn't going to happen. Sorry for wasting your time, Jack. And then I said, well, wait a second, 15,000 words? I'm a novelist. I can write this. I've never done a YA book, but, you know, I'll just do it myself. And then, of course, it evolved, because I don't really write children's books. I write books for adults. So even though I think the book is written at a level that a 12-year-old will understand and enjoy the Golden Motorcycle Gang, I really have written with Jack. And I wrote the first draft, and then Jack edited it, and then we wrote together the final draft. But the book evolved not with this big plan that, oh, we're going to get together, we're going to make a lot of money. It really was just, I loved the story. We needed somebody to write the children's book version, which evolved into the adult version, and that's how the book came to be. Of course, now that the book is here, Jack and I are both seeing how this is really potentially a very important book, because it really can galvanize thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people towards positive action. And hooking up with our mutual mentor and friend, Barbara Marks Huppert, we added in the appendices information on many, many organizations, some of which have the ambition of enlisting as many as 100 million people in their movement, such as Push for Peace, the Pachamama Alliance, and Unify Earth. So there's two levels of the book. One is just an entertaining story that anyone who's read any Chicken Soup book is going to be very interested in knowing more about Jack Canfield, who created that series. And then the other side of it is there's really a spiritual message and a call to social action. We're just pleased that we were able to bring this story to so many people and seeing the positive impact it's having.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Yeah, and, you know, the tone reminded me a little bit of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, I actually met that author briefly. I think that was just a fantastic book. I don't think that we're nearly as literarily wonderful as that book. I mean, that book was just a work of art. I'd like to think, you know, we're a well-written, good book, but that's high praise indeed to compare us with that.
It's really an act of bravery to bring this out, I think, because, you know, these things do need to be talked about. And I think, as you said, when you were 15, you got talked out of talking about your near-death experience. People can be hesitant to talk about these things. It's pretty exciting to see this.
I think you're absolutely right. And the person that's most brave, of course, is Jack, because Jack has a bigger platform and more to lose, so to speak. But, you know, it's because of his big platform that it's really important that he did sort of come out. We even have talked about it. It's like coming out of the closet and sharing that, yeah, Jack has a spiritual side, and he does believe in more than the material side of his success principle. And we're actually now already talking about doing the Golden Motorcycle Gang Chronicles, where it will be kind of a Chicken Soup for Unusual Souls, where we'll solicit other people's experiences, because it is true. Once you reveal that you've had a spiritual experience like this, you start hearing from other people, whether it's through synchronicities or deep meditation or past life regressions, where other people report very similar types of experiences. So that's exciting for us, because we think if we can get a couple of books out that show that it's not just Jack and I, but it's, you know, at least 100 people we'll get stories from for the Golden Motorcycle Gang Chronicles, then more and more people will start expressing this side of their being. Because it is true, we're all both human beings and spirit beings. And once people recognize this, I think it will actually have a positive impact on their behavior.
And one of the other people that was very involved with this, it looks like, is Barbara Marx Hubbard.
Very much so. I almost went to the extreme of listing her as a third author, but she was more of an inspiration. But she did meet with both Jack and I on a couple of occasions, and she's entrenched in the latter part of the book because the whole idea of conscious evolution, which she's been holding space for 40 years, is really the ultimate theme and direction of the book. And for those who have not read Barbara's work, conscious evolution is really evolution by choice, not chance. And it takes the position that we're not here randomly and that the universe is not random, but there's actually directionality and intelligence to the evolution of the universe itself, and that we represent one sort of intelligent species that can play an active role in choosing the higher ground, if you will, choosing to evolve towards greater beauty, greater complexity, and from the point of view of the human species, greater happiness and joy, because it really isn't in anyone's interest to have a world that's not working. For the world to be working, it has to be working for all 7 billion human beings. Can't be working for 100 million over here in America and nobody else. We have to make some changes, and we have to do them in a hurry. It's not just the environment that is heading towards some kind of doomsday scenario, but our economic system, our medical system. You know, it's time for a change. You know, if we all do that, we're finding from organizations like HeartMath, we can create resonance, we can create change, that what people think and do does have an impact, and it's not hopeless. Just because our news media is always reporting the failures that are happening doesn't mean that we don't have solutions or that we can't make major changes. That's the theme of the book. And you know, throughout the book, we've put in quotes from people like Gandhi and Margaret Mead, and all the wise leaders we've had in the past have all focused on the ability of a small group of people to really make significant change. What we have now with the internet is a relatively large group of people being able to communicate with an even larger group of people. So once you start to see that perspective, the idea of making vast changes quickly is no longer needing a miracle. It's just needing people to use their resources and find a way to connect and visualize and work towards a unified goal.
What kind of positive things are you thinking about?
There's a number of existing organizations. We don't really want to create anything new other than serve as the connector of these great organizations that already exist. There's so many positive movements that are already out there. Of course, we weren't able to name them all. I think a movie came out where they did run the credits of all the not-for-profit organizations that are doing good things, ranging from animal care to ecology issues to abused women, on and on and on. And the level they were showing the screen credits, it would take 24 hours to list every organization. So it's not that there's a lack of organizations out there doing good things. It's a lack of them connecting with each other and working together. And so our goal is that everyone who reads the Golden Motorcycle Gang goes to the appendices and looks through and sees the organizations that are of most interest to them. We have the Shift Network. We have the Club of Budapest. We have Push for Peace. We have 4 Years Go. We have the Institute of HeartMath. We have the Pachamama Alliance. And then we did list all the members of Jack's Transformational Leadership Council. Not that we want to sort of have those people stand out from others as more important as individuals, but most of those people have dedicated their lives to creating transformational experiences for clients and corporations. So given that the book is the story of transformation and that we had the permission of these people before we put their names in, that they wanted to be included and that we had access to them, we did list all of them as well. So there's literally over 100 transformational trainers and leaders listed in the Golden Motorcycle Gang appendices, and people can Google them and contact them. We give the websites and choose any of those individuals to connect with as well.
And another thing you have is, I love it, the 13 points motorcycle maintenance.
Yes. Well, that was another synchronicity. I did not know. I happened to have met Jane Wilhite only recently. We made a film called Tapping the Source, and my good friend Bernie Dorman called me up and said, you got to get Jane. PSI is one of the most important organizations in the human development movement, and they're up in Clear Lake, and Jane never leaves Clear Lake, and nobody even knows about her but the people that have gone through her program. And so we contacted Jane, and she was kind enough to fly down and be in an interview for our film. And then when I was going through in the novel, I sort of was thinking, you know, I needed to bring in another character at the end of the book. I needed to introduce so that we could have some dialogue and move this and, you know, introduce the Transformational Leadership Council. And at the time, I kind of randomly chose Jane. I mean, it wasn't completely random because I really respected her and what she has done and her commitment to helping the world. PSI has a whole not-for-profit arm in addition to training for corporations and individuals. So it was logical. But it was only after I included her in the book and sent her a draft of the book that she wrote back to me and said, you know, this is pretty much of a coincidence, but, you know, my late husband Thomas was a motorcycle aficionado, and he actually used motorcycle training as a way of teaching people how to live their lives, whether they weren't riding a motorcycle or not. His training, you know, human development training, self-development training, he used the motorcycle as a metaphor, and so he developed this whole training program. Do you want to see it? And I said, sure, and so that's why we included it. And we actually have, as a free ebook, there's actually, I think, 123 total lessons that are up on a free ebook on our site, thegoldenmotorcyclegang.com, that you can download and get the entire curriculum, if you will, from Thomas Wilhite and PSI and Jane. So that was just another synchronicity. I mean, Jack tells us the story of the Golden Motorcycle Gang. We bring Jane into the book, and Jane's late husband has used the motorcycle also as a metaphor for his training. So a little bit of Twilight Zone going on here, but that's the nature of this book. Just things came together in a magical way. When I first started out with writing The Golden Motorcycle Gang, I was not aware of the importance that Barbara Marx Hubbard would have in the book. It was only Jack hosted an 80th birthday party for Barbara at his home in Santa Barbara, and it was only when I was at that party that I realized, oh my gosh, this isn't just a casual friendship between Jack and Barbara. They really share a common vision, and that's how Barbara's concept of conscious evolution is the logical organizing principle for the Golden Motorcycle Gang and Jack's own life. Because it's one thing to help others, but we now have a goal, a very specific goal to achieve, and that makes it even easier and more rewarding.
And back to the motorcycle training course, Jane Wilhite, didn't her husband have a similar vision or something with the motorcycles?
You know, I never, unfortunately, got to meet him. So, you know, I just have the story as told to me by Jane. But yes, he did have a very similar experience that Jack had. And I think, you know, one of the reasons, I mean, it's more than that, because I don't want people to think we're all, like, having to have been there with Jack riding Golden Motorcycles in space. We actually introduced the idea of Silver Motorcycle Gang and the Diamond Motorcycle Gang. The motorcycle for us is such a wonderful metaphor of freedom and joy. Motorcycles are not created by angels. Theoretically, an angel doesn't need a motorcycle. A motorcycle is created by human beings. And in our stereotypes, it's a mechanic type guy, it's a health angel type guy, it's a little bit of a wild man, you know, born to be wild. You know, you go back to the 60s and you have that great film with Fonda and Jack Nicholson. What we're trying to say is being spiritual is not about not enjoying life. I mean, you can be a little bit wild, like the song Born to be Wild. You can have fun. You can totally be human, and you can also be spiritual. And I think this is very important. We have too many religions that have sort of said, oh, you're only going to find God if you give up everything. Well, we don't believe that. It's like, why would that be the case? Why can't you be fully human, enjoy life, enjoy good food, enjoy good relationships with others, enjoy life, and still be spiritual? And our experience is, yes, you can. And so why not be a member of the Golden Motorcycle Gang and find your own joy? Obviously, it's a little bit different than sort of the old Hells Angel, where you're sort of king of the road, who cares about anybody else? That's not what we're saying at all. There are rules, if you will, of being kind to others, being compassionate, focusing on the impact of your actions so that whatever joy you're creating for yourself is not coming at someone else's expense or doing harm to the environment. But within those really basic common sense limitations that I think most mothers teach their children, you know, at the age of six, there's not this big sort of, oh, you got to learn all these rules and regulations in order to be a good spiritual being or a good planetary citizen. In fact, one of the things that we make a point of in the book is sometimes it's very appropriate to defy authority. And Jack was born in a military family. He went to military school. We talk a lot about that in the opening chapters of the Golden Motorcycle Gang. And so he respects authority and he respects discipline, but he also respects when it's no longer serving. And I think that's what is really at issue for so many people today. They've been raised to fit in, and they're fitting into a system that is no longer working. And the basic principles of loyalty and defending our country and being part of our existing institutions, there's nothing wrong with those impulses. But I think what each one of us needs to start examining working the way the Founding Fathers intended it to work. I mean, what is all this bickering? What is this putting your own individual political party above the needs of the nation? What is this of considering your political opponents enemies? I mean, they're not enemies. They're just the loyal opposition. They're a different point of view. We've got to get back to finding ways to really work together and, you know, not just doing something because, well, that's the way it's always been done. And that's the real theme of the Golden Motorcycle Gang. And we don't have all the answers, but we know that the answers are out there. And we know that there's actually over a million organizations. We've only listed a few hundred that are working towards these positive goals.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So it really sounds like a lot of the theme is just connecting people and organizations to work on the greater good type issues.
Absolutely. I think that it's so important. I just know from a business point of view, I'm approached all the time. I'm kind of a pioneer in the book publishing world. I was involved with the first print-on-demand company, the first e-book company, now the pioneers of the enhanced e-book. Even in our book, we went ahead, we have what are called QR codes, which are, you can take a picture. They're called quick response codes with your cell phone of the QR codes in our book, The Golden Motorcycle Gang. And immediately on your cell phone, you'll see some videos of Jack and I and Michael Beckwith, who wrote the foreword, and Barbara Marks Hubbard. So I have seen in my own life how so often when you have a good idea, somebody else has a similar idea. And our point is, let's connect the people with good ideas. Let's not compete with each other. Let's cooperate and let's pool the resources, and instead of making a small difference to 100 people, let's see if by combining with other groups that have similar goals, we can make a bigger difference to hundreds of thousands of people or even millions of people. And through communication with the internet and other means, you really can share your success stories with millions of people instantly. And you do need some structure, and, you know, you can do it randomly on YouTube, but who's going to find it? But if you start connecting with other organizations that are already working towards similar goals, I think that it's going to be almost geometric, the progression of impact that each of us as an individual can have.
So as a Harvard-educated anthropologist, how does that fit into all of this journey for you?
Anthropology is the study of man. So that includes philosophy as well as behaviors. And, you know, then through research, also studying rituals and behavior patterns from many, many, probably hundreds of ancient cultures. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, let's just focus on the economics. As soon as we get cold fusion working and we're over the hump with needing oil dependence, everything will resolve itself. Well, the reality is we shouldn't stop that pursuit of alternative energy, and that's going to help things. But that's not really the ultimate solution. The ultimate solution is a change in the consciousness of the human species towards greater sharing and greater cooperation. And the individual problems that will be solved much more rapidly. And it's not to give any less importance to the things that are working and that are technical that need to be done, but to realize that the technical solutions alone, without the wider consciousness and awareness of what really success means, won't solve the problems. Because in defining what success means, as Jack says, we've gone from go-getters to go-givers. And go-givers are the successes for the 21st century. More than the go-getters. It's great to create. You know, Steve Jobs was someone that I had known personally, and I think that what he created was absolutely fantastic and has been a changer for the world, you know, all these devices that we now have. But we need for this next generation of leaders to be even beyond a Steve Jobs and to see how we're able to use these devices and these technologies in ways that really help everyone on the planet. And, you know, I think that's the next frontier, if you will. There's more reason for hope than sorrow. I mean, we're all going to die in our physical bodies. And, you know, a lot of people won't believe this. And I don't actually have any religious affiliation, so I'm not pushing any specific belief. But based on my own experience, we are eternal. There is a spiritual side of each human being that is here forever. And that spiritual side is actually linked to every other human being. And beyond every other human being, it's linked to all of matter. When I was in the state that I was in, I was actually able to sense being part of the tree, part of the dirt, part of the wall, part of even plastic glasses that were in the doctor's office. You're not what you think you are. You're part of something that is universal. And yes, as a human being, you have your individual personality, you have your individual boundaries, and that's one level of your reality. But there's another level as a spiritual being where you're part of everything. There is no separation. There are no boundaries. You're not limited by your body, and we are literally all one. And once people start having that experience, or at least accepting that that experience may be real or could be real, I think it will change because the reality is when you're confronting another human being, you are confronting yourself on one level. And so many of the conflicts that we have are only conflicts on one level, and there's another level where we can find common ground. And once people start focusing on that, I think we're going to see rapid movement, even with some of the situations that seem absolutely impossible. You know, I think it's better to be hopeful than pessimistic. I'm not a Pollyanna. I am not expecting to change overnight, and I see certain areas where it does seem almost hopeless, where, you know, you have situations in Africa, you have situations in the Middle East, you have such intolerance in many parts of the world, subjugation of whole groups of people, you have mass murders. I mean, we could go on and on with all the negatives. You have starvation. These are not fantasy problems. These are real problems, and they need real solutions. And regrettably, in some cases, we're not going to be able to solve them in time for all of the individuals who are in these states of suffering. But we can start working towards a solution so that these types of situations will not be part of the human experience 10, 20, or 50 years from now.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you found it helpful. For more interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.